Attempt blocked by McNabb. To the right circle, a try. Kick, save Hill. Rebound, another try, save Hill. A third try, save. And the rebound to the right corner.
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Bob boots it ahead, sticks it left. Barbashev in. Back to the right, a shot. Score! Marchessault, 19 seconds in.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Wednesday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. It's Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, and joining us now, the illustrious Darren Millard. Darren, how you doing?
Illustrious?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's you. It's the
Do
voice.
Do I owe you money?
No. Well, yeah, but... You know, the toonies and loonies, that's a whole other story for a whole other day.
How much money do you think I actually owe you?
With interest? Quite a bit.
No, with just total in lost bets, and then we can do the interest on top of that.
Well, it's Canadian, so probably like 30 cents US.
Yeah, it's like 50 cents.
I'm not getting an answer on this, am I?
You owe him a pop,
you guys,
at
you
least.
You guys talk about how much money I owe you in lost bets, and nobody can give me a straight answer.
I think
probably like $5.
Yeah,
at this
I think
point,
it's
really.
Five yeah. Canadian dollars.
Yeah, something like that. So again, it's not worth anything.
Well, how can it be toonies if it's an odd number?
Well, because I think you learned your lesson after losing the second bet and only went for a loony the third time.
I think you're making that up.
No, I think it's $5.
You guys are totally off the mark on this.
By the way, you owe me at least two toonies and a loony.
A loony is a dollar, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What, so how many bills?
How much do you think a toonie is?
Well, that's $2, obviously. So wait, are there...
That's what I said. Two toonies and a loonie. That's $5. What are you talking about?
Is there a $5 Canadian bill?
Oh, we do have a $5 Canadian bill, yeah.
Is it a fivey?
It's not a fivey because it's a paper bill.
Okay.
It's a paper monetary.
So that's the lowest paper bill?
We have pennies. Well, no, we scrapped the pennies. We have
five
cents. Hold on.
You don't have pennies up in Canada?
I love it.
We scrapped the pennies.
That's great.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe 8 years ago. Got rid of the pennies.
That's amazing.
Like we don't make them anymore. There's still pennies around, but there's like if I want somebody's thoughts, I got to pay 5 cents because you can't go penny for your thoughts.
Like, but you don't call it a nickel, do you?
That's nickel. Okay. Nickel mining. So there's 5 cents. There's 10. There's dimes. There's 25 cents, and some you can get 50 cent pieces, but it's not really in circulation. Mm. And then you got loonies, which is $1 coins. And toonies, which are $2 coins, and then everything else goes to paper.
Okay.
Okay, so you owe me
$5. Which is the funny paper for you guys.
Yeah.
You guys call it funny paper.
No, I like it. I like the colorful money.
You know, my daughter likes it, the Canadian bills, because you can wash them. They don't disintegrate, because she's forever washing bills in
the
jeans.
You know, for the longest time when I heard the word money laundering, I actually thought people... Physically washed
the money?
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Well, you shouldn't be thinking that when you're into your mid-30s, that's for sure.
Like, conceptually, it makes sense, but no, it's not that.
I should write down the things that I misunderstood growing up and do an entire segment on that one day, because there's a lot of those things that we just did not grasp or we totally misunderstood, and money laundering is I'm with you. Like there's I'm sure part of me that thought, how are they washing it? They're changing serial numbers.
Yes.
Like what are they doing with that,
washing fingerprints off of
yes
it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I'm with you. I mean, we may be the only two in this.
Yeah.
And Ryan and everybody else are smarter. But I'm with you on that one.
Well, you know, you and me are always on the same wavelength.
Yeah,
with ridiculous
page.
Things like
Absolutely.
That. So, yeah.
Can you believe it? Like it's 6 minutes in and I've totally derailed whatever we were going
to
do.
Welcome to a Wednesday.
Welcome to being back on the program. So can we get into the game rating from last night?
Sure.
Let's go.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Yeah!
I think this is entirely based on, and what we're going to hear from the three of us, is whether you are big picture or little picture. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's really a wrong rating in whether or not you go super low or you go high. It's just your perspective on this situation, because both are right. Chapman, let's start.
Well, to me, process, sure, it's important, but getting points is more important to me right now than process. Putting distance between yourself and the St. Louis Blues and the Minnesota Wild is paramount to the process at this particular moment. Sure, I want to see them play a full 60 minutes, and I think for the most part they kind of did, but I want to see them pick up points. They picked up a point on both St. Louis and Minnesota. They gave up a 3-goal lead in the third period, yeah, but they got the point, and that's ultimately what matters to me. So I'm going to give it a 3, because while I don't want to see them blow a 3-goal lead, I am happy with the fact that they got the point and they put distance between themselves and the teams chasing them.
So what's a 3?
A 3 is a tequila.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Ready? Mm-hmm. Do you do the salt?
Tequila may not be right for everyone. Side effects may include dizziness, nausea, vomiting, incarceration.
I like salt. The incarceration.
That's a good one.
Salt, slam it, and then lemon, right?
Lime.
Lime? Yeah, that's my problem. That's why it tastes bad. I'm doing the lemon. What are you going with, Ryan?
Yeah, okay. So if you would have told me 3 days ago the Golden Knights would take 3 out of 4 points in the first two games of this road trip, back-to-back St. Louis-Nashville, I'd have taken that all day long. The fact of the matter is the Golden Knights are closer to a playoff spot and securing that spot because of the fact that they were able to get a point last night. It's not lost on me that with the amount of time left in the third period and the way that the Nashville Predators were playing, it's possible Vegas loses out on both of those points, and yet they found something. They were able to get the puck in deep. They were able to play better the final 7-ish minutes of that period to kind of get themselves to at least a standings point. I wish there was a rating between a 3 and a 4, because I'm less inclined to hold that against them that they gave up a 3-goal lead in the third period. But there isn't a 3.5, so I'm going to have to go right in the middle with a tequila, a 3 out of 5.
The situation is needed to be examined from two different angles. If you just look at purely the game, it was a disappointing result, and you would be a 1.
Yeah.
Being able to get an advantage in the first period with a 3-0 lead and lead by 3 on 2 different occasions and have that sizable advantage into the third period before it evaporated and then lose quickly in overtime, that was a disappointing result, and nobody can argue otherwise. Just based simply on that one specific game, if you put on the blinders and look through the telescope and everything's focused on that little bit. But if you pull out and you examine the bigger picture and the fact that it was a back-to-back scenario, you're playing a team that was on a 17-game point streak, you have the American Hockey League goaltender starting, there's a lot going against you last night, and to be able to get a point out of it is a positive. And to be able to get that game to a place where you're adding to it. So in consecutive nights, you gained on your rivals. Mm-hmm. You added to your cushion on consecutive nights. And right now, echoing what Chapman said, the points are more important than the process. Now, the process was looking really good mm-hmm. for 8 games. Last night in the third period was a stumble. You can chalk up some of what happened in the third period to fatigue and the fact that you're playing a team that was running as well as they ever have in the franchise's history. Those two things collided and made for a spectacular result. Not in the good part of it, spectacular for the Vegas Golden Knights, but it was fireworks all over. But getting a point out of that with your American Hockey League goaltender in the mix and acquiring 3 total points over the first 2 games is a real positive. I'll go 3 as well and make it a clean sweep with tequila. Let's slam it back and have some fun with it. And I'll go a step further and declare the Golden Knights, while not official, punch their ticket to the playoffs because of what happened in the positive result against St. Louis, coming up +1 in that overtime win, and then adding a point last night and being 6 points up on the St. Louis Blues approaching the Golden Knights' last 10 games. Again, doesn't make it official, but really would cause something out of this world to happen. I don't want to draw a comparison to what happened last night, but
yeah.
I'm really confident that the Vegas Golden Knights took the big step towards the Stanley Cup playoffs and locking in their spot by what they did against the St. Louis Blues and the Nashville Predators. You have to be better and be in more control than you were in the third period last night, but just a little bit of clearance and just outlook on what happened. They weren't terrible in the third period last night.
No.
They outshot the Predators, yep. Believe it or not.
Yep.
You would never expect that. I haven't heard a lot of that narrative today. They only allowed 8 shots against
yes.
in the third period last yep. night, and they got victimized by some really good opportunities and some circumstance. Could you argue Zucker made contact with Yuri Patera on the 4-3 goal? I think you could. Mm-hmm. I like the challenge on the offside. We'll get into the challenge idea a little bit. Then the power play goal that went over the shoulder of Patera. Like those were, they capitalized on some really good opportunities. It wasn't total domination by the Nashville Predators. So I think the idea that they just succumb to the pressure is a little bit misguided as well. And you can be somewhat a little bit more encouraged by that. And Saros made a couple of saves in the third period.
Yeah. Yeah, that was essentially my focus in hour number one when we opened up the phones. It was pushing back on this idea that the Golden Knights were either took their foot off the gas or that they were under siege in the third period. The Nashville Predators are going as well as any team is going right now in the National Hockey League. They made some great plays, and every single play it felt like that they made in the third period ended up in the back of the net. And when you're on an 18-game point streak, as the Predators are after last night, things tend to go your way sometimes, and it certainly did in the third period. They created their own luck. They were able to cash in. Good on them. But I was encouraged by the Golden Knights and their ability to not fold over the final 7 minutes of that period and get some momentum back and get at least a point out of the game.
I think based on your comments in hour number one, we're all in agreement, because I'm right in lockstep with you, that the challenge was the right call last night. You don't want to leave that in the bag if you've got an opportunity to take a goal off the board, which they did. Now, there's such a thing as, have you guys ever heard the term parallaxial effect?
A parallax, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, yes,
the
yes.
Parallaxial effect is the parallaxial effect is the terminology and the presentation that John Shannon did at Sportsnet 6 years ago. And it's unbelievable, where it looks like it's over the line, but it's not over the line. Like we use it on goal line situations to see if the puck is in or not. Offside can be the same situation. That looked like it was offside from multiple different views, and I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But the frame by frame, and I think I used this in relation to the Kolesar play a week ago. I thought that play was offside too.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, I like that challenge on that particular night. But because it was in between frames on the video, you never saw the skate over the line before the puck, because mm-hmm. they went at the exact bad line. It's amazing that two of these things happened inside of a week. But last night was the same thing. I thought it was offside, but you never saw the skate over the line right beside the puck still on the line.
Mm-hmm.
When you just go frame by frame, it was that quick. So in real time, do I believe it was offside? Yes. Do I support and agree with the decision that came out of the situation room and the linesman? They had no other choice.
Right.
But to say it was a good goal, because there was no legitimate proof. We can always say the puck was in when it was under a pad, but you never see the puck in. That's impossible to say. It's very similar situation. I like the idea that the challenge was made, and Dave Rogowski is really good at what he does as the video coach. I thought it was worth the gamble, and you have a penalty kill that is up 2+ points in the last 8 games on its season average, mm-hmm. which if they were going like this, they would be a top 5 penalty kill. If you're wrong, you hand it over to them and you hope you get a kill. They just didn't get a kill. So I was all in favor and fully supportive at the time. Surprised that it wasn't, like, based on your eye test, that it was able to stand. Understand that it wasn't. If I can cover, I basically cover all the angles there. I'm not going to be wrong in any of those based on that.
Yeah, to me, I thought it was offside. I understand that there was nothing conclusive that right. could overturn it, so therefore it is what it is. And you're right, like, you can make the same argument for the Keegan Kolasar goal and Brett Howden, whether or not he was offside. One benefited the Golden Knights, one obviously goes against them last night. As we say with everything, they all tend to even themselves out at the end of the season. It's just interesting that we were able to get two in about a week span. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, I think you trust in your penalty kill. Like you said, go out there, get a kill. They were excellent earlier on in the game on the penalty kill, but the Predators made a couple of plays and, you know, it ends up in the back of your net. But I wouldn't question that challenge at all. I thought it was the right call in the moment. I thought you had a better chance of getting something definitive on the offside than you did when it came to goaltender interference. Mm. So I liked that angle from the Golden Knights and Dave Rogowski and Bruce Cassidy. It just didn't work out that there was anything conclusive to pull the goal back.
Zucker's stick did get in there on Patera.
Yeah.
Kind of spun him around. I don't know whether that's like a hockey play. Elliot and I went back and forth talking last night on it. Does he shoot and his stick just ends up there and it's a good play? That would have been really difficult. Mm-hmm. It's funny, because like, if Patera just lies down, he's got it.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like it was destined to go against them. But they get 3 out of 4, and they start off the road trip in fine fashion. Now you get a day to breathe. You finish off what is 4 games in 6 nights tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets, and you try and take advantage of a team that's going in the wrong direction in Winnipeg tomorrow night, and you can eliminate, for all intents and purposes, the Minnesota Wild on Saturday. So there's more good than certainly bad. Tomorrow's important just to keep some momentum going. You don't want to stall at all based on how you lost against Nashville and then not win against the Winnipeg Jets. You would love to keep that little surge going out of things and try to ride that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to get right back into the habits that the Golden Knights have really built over the last 8 games or so. And, you know, I'm expecting them to be better overall through 60 minutes tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets. And you mentioned it, like, it's not necessarily going well for Winnipeg. And so maybe you can strike while the iron's hot a little bit there and get some good vibes going before you get into a really big game against the Minnesota Wild.
Every Wednesday, I want to offer up a new segment called Top 5. It's going to be just anything, predominantly hockey, but we're going to get to stages where other things are going to jump out and we might do some off-the-wall ideas of Top 5s.
Okay.
And I'll lean on you guys every now and then, but this will be something that I'll bring to you and give you. And you can debate whether you agree or not or offer different submissions. Today we're going to start off with the top 5 as it relates right now to the playoff picture with a couple of weeks to go. Do we have 5? Let's start with this. Do we have 5 what you would call Cinderella teams in a playoff position?
Ooh,
because it's so balanced this year that you could say there's 12, 13 legitimate contenders where you would say, wouldn't be surprised if Carolina won or Tampa with their pedigree won or the Florida Panthers, whether they won. Do you think we have 5?
Probably more in the East.
I don't think
5. I think like I'm looking Philadelphia, Washington, I'll throw Toronto
five.
In there for Cinderella.
I've got five, but you guys can challenge it if you want.
Okay, that's fine.
Washington Capitals.
Yes,
absolutely.
I consider a Cinderella team entering the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make it last year and are battling to make it in this year. Now they're a high profile Cinderella. Like they got the great dress and the awesome slipper, and
they're Cinderella arriving at the ball. Yeah,
they're driving at the ball in a great limousine, but still, she's still Cinderella.
They're -26 in goal differential.
Yeah, they are abs like in terms of Cinderella, they are it.
It defies logic.
If they didn't have Alexander
there.
Ovechkin on their team,
mm-hmm.
it'd be like. Easy, Cinderella.
Yeah.
Philadelphia Flyers, no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cinderella. From the start of the season
fine. Thanks for asking, though.
Being in this position and having the bumps along the road and different high-profile issues, considering what they went through a year ago in changing manager, hiring a president, sticking with Torts, which I think some people were surprised, going through a rebuild, but not having to rebuild. It's been amazing. So I would put Washington, Philadelphia as Cinderella teams from the East.
Mm-hmm.
My final three are in the West.
Okay.
Nashville.
Yep.
Cinderella team. First year general manager ever. He just took over.
Yep.
He'd never been a general manager before in Barry Trotz, and a new coach in Andrew Burnett. They bought out some players. They changed their roster, brought in a couple of guys. Ryan O'Reilly's been great, but they have overachieved. I talked to Andrew Burnett 6 weeks ago about this and asked him, and he didn't deny it when I put the question to him. Have you overachieved? He walked around, but and gave me reasons why he's impressed with where they are, but he didn't come out flat out and say, you're wrong, or we haven't. We expected to be here. So the Nashville Predators, what they have been able to do, and it's back-to-back great second halves for the Nashville Predators, and now on an 18-game point streak, they're the hottest team in the National Hockey League,
yep.
And they're Cinderella right now.
Yeah.
Vancouver Canucks,
yeah,
leading the Western Conference.
I agree.
On top of the Pacific Division. How are the Vancouver Canucks a Cinderella team? Because we didn't expect this.
Nope.
And we don't know what's going to come from this team in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Didn't make it a year ago. Brought in a new head coach in the back half. Made some adjustments with their roster. Added to it, very aggressive in the trade front, but you didn't know how it's all going to work. Would the structure lead to wins? It's been really good under my pal Rick Tocchet, but the question mark now is these players have never been, first and foremost, the biggest question mark around the Vancouver Canucks is, can you take advantage of them in a series
mm-hmm.
when you focus on that blue line? And can you physically stop them up front? Can you lean into that group? They're a smaller group in places, a slender group in other places, and they can get frustrated in a different section. That's the big question. And I believe that teams will be able to lean into them. And it will be certainly closer than what you might expect a one versus wild card series to be.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver, if they go deep, they will be a surprise in my mind. And the final Cinderella team in my top five are the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm-hmm.
A team that last year when they left T-Mobile Arena to great controversy with the coach coming out and saying what he did, calling out the players, and then the players responding back in the subsequent days before locker room cleanout, that player being bought out in Blake Wheeler, going all summer, the fans not buying in because they didn't know what was going to happen, and the eve of the season, signing Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck to long-term contracts, and then the trade of Pierre-Luc Dubois, bringing in some depth with this team. You didn't know how it was going to turn out, and they've achieved based on certainly last year and the way it ended. You wouldn't have expected when they were flying home to Winnipeg to say this team could go into the final month of the season to challenge for the Central Division against Colorado and against Dallas. But they have. They've been arguably the most consistent team, I think, in the West. And that's Vancouver, who have gone on a couple of runs. But I think Winnipeg's been really good all year. They've got the Vezina Trophy winner in Connor Hellebuck. He's going to win it this season. And they've got a lot to love in Scheifele and Connor. What they brought in to the organization from the Los Angeles Kings is very beneficial. But they are the smallest building in the league, smallest market in the National Hockey League. They'll always be worked into Cinderella, but I think it really does fit right now. They've got a head start because they got a really good team, but I don't think, like, if they won and snapped the long Stanley Cup drought in Canada, a lot of people would be surprised at this point that it came from a market like Winnipeg, never mind a team that was in great discomfort at the end of last season. Those are my top five Cinderellas. You guys agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think if you're going to pick five teams that, you know, we don't necessarily expect them to be or didn't expect them to be where they are right now in playoff spots and contending for what they're contending for, I think you're right on the money. When it comes to the Vancouver Canucks, I think the big question, right, for them is, do they hold up to the rigors of playoff hockey, right? You kind of mentioned it. Can you lean on their players? Can you make them uncomfortable? Can you get to Vancouver over the course of a seven-game series? And I think that if they're able to answer that question, their run could open up a lot of people's eyes. Now, we'll see how that ultimately plays out. The Washington Capitals, as Chapman points out, like, I don't understand, frankly, how they're in a playoff spot right now, but
Charlie
they are.
Lindgren.
Yeah, well, there's, yeah, Charlie Lindgren. He's been phenomenal. You're right there. Ovechkin's been heating up of late, but you're also going through a stretch without Tom Wilson after his latest suspension, and you're still finding ways to win and get into the and, you know, kind of improve your opportunity there. So good on them. Good on the Flyers for continuing to push and kind of not relinquishing their spot. You know, and Nashville, to me, like, this is a team that has opened my eyes recently. I look at them and, you know, they're really fun to watch. They're good in the offensive zone. Roman Josi's phenomenal. UC Saros is a great goaltender. I think this is kind of, you know, what we've all wanted to see from Nashville, like a run where they are exceptional, and now they're in a great spot to do some damage in the postseason. And, you know, not a ton of pressure, I don't think, on them, but at the same time, building because of what they've been able to do the last month and a half, 2 months. And then I think your points on Winnipeg are interesting, mainly because you're right. After that loss to the Vegas Golden Knights last year in the postseason, I don't think anybody expected Winnipeg to be back in the playoffs. I don't think anybody expected that things would work out as well as they have for Winnipeg this season. And they have been consistently good all year long. I know they're going through a bit of a dip right now, but I do think they're battle-tested. I do think that they are going to be a team that's not going to be an easy out in the postseason. And, you know, maybe that's not exactly Cinderella stuff, but in terms of Canadian teams with aspirations to win, I think they're the most Cinderella of all of them.
You know, I'm going to push back on that one a little bit, because I think once they re-signed Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuck, they were in position, right? Like, they had the players in place, and it's not like they're a roster made up of guys you've never heard of. I mean, they still have Josh Morrissey and Kyle Connor. I thought the big thing for them was bringing back Nino Niederreiter and the emergence of Cole Perfetti, because I think these are two guys that we didn't know what we were going to get from Perfetti because he's a really young guy. And Niederreiter was a guy they picked up at the trade deadline last year, and I thought he was good for them in the playoffs, but I didn't think he was going to stick around. I figured he would go be a free agent and go sign somewhere else, and they brought him back, and he's having a really good season for them. So while maybe not as prolific as Colorado or Dallas, I certainly expected them to be at least in that hunt for the third or fourth spot out of that division, because I think when you look at that division, they're better than a lot of the teams in that division just based on roster construction.
Are they
the best team in the division?
No.
Are they the second best team in the division?
Possibly. Because I think right now the best team in that division is in second place.
Yeah, so that answer right there, more slides closer. And this is Cinderella. This is very different than underdog. Like, I think if you're going to pick underdogs, Tampa Bay would be an underdog. Yeah. Where they've been. I think you could sell me on Toronto being an underdog based on who they're going to probably end up playing.
Yikes.
In the Boston Bruins or the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Los Angeles Kings, I would think, would be positioned as an underdog. That's a different conversation than Cinderella.
To me, the prevailing thought after the contracts for Hellebuck and Scheifele were not, okay, this solves the Winnipeg Jets.
But we liked, you and I had the conversation, we liked the trade when that they made with the LA Kings.
Well, the Dubois trade, sure, absolutely. But when they were able to sign Scheifele and Hellebuck, I don't think that at that moment the prevailing thought was, okay, everything's sorted.
Well, I'll give you
in Winnipeg.
What the word was. Yeah. The word? When they signed those two players on the eve of the National Hockey League season, mm-hmm. was desperation.
Yep, 100%.
That was the word. It wasn't, we've got our guys and we're ready to go and we're going to challenge for the Central Division. It was, we need this to sell tickets, to get everybody back on board, and to get this thing moving in the right direction. Not to the top, but in the right direction. And it oozed of more desperation mm-hmm. than it did, we're going to challenge for the Stanley Cup.
Which proves your point in that if you want to call them Cinderella, that works, mm-hmm. right? Because this was not the expectation for Winnipeg going into the season. It was, let's be in and around it, but not let's challenge for the best spot in the Central. That's not what they were expected to do this year.
I thought they could get one of those guys. Not both of them.
Yeah.
One of them. And I wasn't even sure whether both of them would re-sign. Kevin Cheveldayoff, who got me through grade 12 math by sliding me the marks and the answer sheet, he made things happen there. He pulled the rabbit out. Mm-hmm. And it might be his best, most miraculous move outside of getting me through grade 12 math. He got it done, and good on him. But that reeked of more desperation than we want to challenge, which is Cinderella.
Is he the GM of the year right now?
I think that is wide open.
Because I like what Danny Briere's done in Philadelphia. I think he's probably in the discussion. But I think
what's Danny Briere done?
Well, the Flyers are in the playoffs. I mean, that's
No. But to be GM
torts.
Of the year,
that's Torts.
What's Danny Briere?
Did he hire Torts? He didn't fire Torts. Got to get credit for that.
Chapman, no, no. Bill Zito, like what Bill Zito's done. And the great thing about the general manager of the year is it's voted during the playoffs. Every other award is voted on before the start of the playoffs. So there's some influence of playoff success or failure on the GM of the year that's named in the National Hockey League. So would Kevin Cheveldayoff be up there? Absolutely. Based on the moves that he made last summer, mm-hmm. both trading Pierre-Luc Dubois, which was not a good fit, buying out Blake Wheeler, making the big signings, but then don't forget about his trade deadline work as well, mm-hmm. and what he's been able to do on that front, boosting the back end and then up front. I think that you'll see some Ken Holland love in what he's been able to do, massaging his lineup in Edmonton. Idea of the Vegas Golden Knights at the trade deadline,
yep.
making the work that they did to bring in not just Mantha and not just Hanifin, but the surprise yeah. of Tomas Hertl.
Pulling off blockbusters.
Now we'll see.
Come on.
We'll see what the success is there.
Yeah. Fair.
On that front. But those are the guys that have the GMs that have made significant moves, and then put in Don Waddell in Carolina mm-hmm. a year ago was really really criticized for a lack of action, and he's made different moves throughout the season with the Hurricanes to try and get them in. So I think it's You don't have one or two people there. It's probably six, seven guys for GM of the Year that could go there. One of them, Danny Briere of Philadelphia, will not be on the ballot.
I'm glad you brought up Dom Waddell, because going after a Jake Guentzel is not necessarily a typical Carolina Hurricane move, but it's one that could absolutely move the needle and do some damage for them in the postseason.
A lot of fun. There's top five every Wednesday. We'll bring it in and around. Some weeks we may be tight for time with guests, but we'll try to be as consistent as we can. We'll get to one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. A quick one as we continue on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
We got to fly, but I love that word. Doug Marsh just coming in with the update, banquet. Banquet is a great word.
It's nostalgic.
It is,
yeah,
totally.
Course, the banquet
go
beer.
Up to shake the coach's hand. It's good. Clinching scenarios for tonight. Boston Bruins will clinch a playoff berth if they get at least 1 point against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Boston Bruins trying to punch their ticket back, and then we'll see what happens in that Atlantic division. They are really good inside their division. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable record. Oscar Sundquist, we saw the hit the other night, tagged by Braden McNabb,
yep,
as he laid out a couple of guys in that contest in the win against the St. Louis Blues. But the man they call Sonny, Oscar Sundquist, out the rest of the season. Ooh. For the Blues with a torn ACL in his right knee as it got just trapped in along the board. So he was in obvious pain, and now you know why and what the discomfort of an ACL looks like when it's torn. Mitch Marner, not expected to return for the Maple Leafs this week as he continues to work his way back. He's got an ankle sprain, and I don't know how much he's going to go, but he did participate in an optional practice, which is good for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Elias Lindholm remains day-to-day with an undisclosed injury. That hasn't been a very effective fit.
No. No, it hasn't.
With the Vancouver Canucks. Now, playoffs can change everything, but for a move that was done early, it hasn't generated the great results. And Scott Mayfield had season-ending surgery, expected to be ready for next season. That's from the New York Islanders. We'll see where they go. Josh Doan, the son of Arizona Coyote legend Shane Doan, was called up, played his first NHL game last night, second rounder, and he scored two goals in his first game. Go to NHL.com. Check out some of the reactions from Shane and his wife as the family enjoyed that. Had a chance to talk to Shane. I was there for Shane's first game in the National Hockey League in Winnipeg.
Oh, wow.
When he was a 19-year-old, and then to be able to watch his son, that was cool. So Josh scored a couple of goals, and that was kind of emotional for me to watch that. It was neat to watch somebody that I thought was really young when he started to watch his son make his NHL debut.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how time works that way, right? But you remember kind of when you are covering players or you know, just in the league, and all of a sudden you watch an entire guy's career, and then you get to cover his son too, or at least cover an aspect of that. It's pretty wild how that works out. And, you know, when I look at Shane Doan, he is everything that is good about the Arizona Coyotes, and he was just the face of that franchise for a long time. And then you've got a homegrown kid getting an opportunity to play for that team and following his dad's footsteps, and he opens up his career with two goals. That's huge. That's awesome, and just a great moment.
Everybody thought the homegrown kid would be Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
But it's Josh Doan.
As it should be.
Shane Doan works for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are supported by Austin Matthews. There's your little route, as the circle of hockey, as we call it. We're going to come back with Catching Up with Chapman next on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Oh, Christopher.
Hi, Darren. So I wanted to bringing this up last week, but, you know, just for whatever reason, never really had the opportunity. But The PWHL, which is the Professional Women's Hockey League, they sold out the Bell Center for a game between the Montreal team and the Toronto team in 20 minutes. It will set a record attendance at the Bell Center of 21,105 people showing up to watch a women's hockey game. I think that's fantastic. It will break the attendance record for women's hockey, breaking the mark of 19,285 back when they played at Scotiabank Arena on February the 16th. So I think it's very cool. I think it talks to the or shows the growth of women's sports, not only in this country, but in North America. And look, I mean, the NWSL is doing good. The WNBA is extremely popular here in Las Vegas. And of course, the NCAA tournament right now, Caitlin Clark is really, really kind of become a household name. So very, very cool to see the growth of women's sports. And I saw that last week. I thought it was amazing. And great job by the fans in Montreal showing up and supporting their women's hockey team.
I thought about this more as it relates to concerts, but like, how do places sell out in 10 minutes?
I don't know. It blows me away.
20,000, like 30,000 tickets. It's always been weird to me. That's a much better take, Chapman, than your GM of the year.
That's very true.
With Danny Briere. Like, I voted on the GM of the year,
yeah,
and my guy, my pick, has never won.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't be able to criticize you, but you were way off base today. Just saying.
It's the first time we've done a show like this for a while, so, you know.
Well, what's funny is, like, in the break, you doubled down with another guy that's not even a GM.
Yeah, well, president of hockey operations. Not a GM.
Still not a GM.
No, not a GM.
No show tomorrow. We'll be back with you on Friday on Fox Sports Las Vegas as the Golden Knights take on the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow